to The Animated Journey, a podcast featuring interviews with animation professionals working in television, film, and games. I'm your host, Angela Ensminger.
And I'm Jeff Schutze.
And Jeff, what's been going on in the world of animation?
So in the world of animation, lots of stuff has been happening. First off is that the Disney Channel has renewed DuckTales for a third season.
Very excited. It's a very good show.
Yeah, from Animation World Network. Quote, Disney Channel has ordered a third season of the Emmy Award-nominated series DuckTales prior to its season 2 premiere on Saturday, October 20th on Disney Channel, Disney Now, and Disney Channel VOD, end quote. This is just so cool. It's such a success for them. I saw that it has 100 million views on social media and digital media in
wow.
its first season.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. And I haven't seen the entire series, but I've seen a bunch of the episodes, and it just has a cool style. It's just fun. I'm following a bunch of the storyboard artists on Twitter, and they have put up a bunch of really cool storyboards and animatics. So I really suggest listeners, you know, subscribe to some of these people, like Brandon Warren, who's at Warranty Void. He had some really cool storyboards, and if you aren't following him already, definitely give him a follow.
Sounds good. I will give him a follow because I love the style of the show, mm-hmm. and I really like the stories, and I really like the voice acting. I think they all do a really good job on it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so next up is not as good news. Telltale Games has shut down. From Polygon, quote, Telltale Games, developer of licensed adventure games such as The Walking Dead series, Game of Thrones, and Batman, has laid off most of its staff as it prepares to shut down completely, end quote. So our thoughts go out to the Telltale employees, and you know, we hope that they find jobs and are able to land on their feet after this. Unfortunately, a lot of the employees are not getting severance or health insurance after being laid off, so that is rough.
That is rough, and you had mentioned earlier that that might not be legal because they're mm-hmm. going to be filing a class action lawsuit.
That's right. From Kotaku, quote, a class action complaint has been filed in California federal court against Telltale Games by an ex-employee. The complaint alleges that Telltale Games violated the state and federal WARN Acts by failing to provide 275 workers who were laid off from the studio last Friday with the 60 days notice required by law, end quote.
Wow. Well, yeah. We will keep you guys up to date with what ends up happening with that.
Yeah, definitely. And lastly, Universal launches its 2019 Writers Program. So right now, submissions can be made through October 31st with the program starting in April of next year. And what makes it even cooler this year is that, and I got this quote from Deadline.com, this year marks the first time that live action and animation hybrid scripts can be submitted, with the caveat that the work maintains an emphasis on live action content.
So we're thinking something like Space Jam or mm-hmm. Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
That's what comes to mind. I really am not sure about this live action animation hybrid scripts, but pretty cool.
I think that's pretty cool, and I'm wondering too. So for anybody out there who's ever wanted to write a script, now is your opportunity. Yeah. You have until October 31st, so mm-hmm. get cracking.
Yeah, if you have an animation hybrid script, send it in.
Yes, especially that, because we're very curious as to what that might entail.
Right.
All right, so in the world of animation events, there are a couple of very interesting symposiums that will be happening in the month of October. First up, at the USC School of Cinematic Arts, they'll be presenting Breaking the Glass Frame, Women in Animation, Past, Present, and Future, and that's going to be held Friday, October 5th through Sunday, October 7th, and it's going to feature keynote speakers Brenda Chapman, co-director of Brave and co-director of The Prince of Egypt, as well as Brown Johnson, producer and creative director of Sesame Workshop and Nickelodeon. And according to the site, the symposium will feature paper presentations, panels, screenings, and networking lunches and receptions. So if you're interested in attending the symposium, you can register now for tickets. As of the time of this recording, the Saturday panels were all sold out, but the Friday and Sunday panels were still available, so make sure to check that out. And as always, the links for all of our events will be listed in the show notes as well as the website, so you'll be able to check those out there. Also happening on Saturday, October 6th, Gallery Nucleus is going to present The Art of Sonder, which is a brand new animated short created by Soba Productions. It's going to be at 6 p.m. Tickets are available now at Eventbrite, And it's going to feature both a screening of the short, as well as a Q&A, a discussion, and there's going to be posters. So while supplies last, you can get a poster of the short. So make sure to check that out. And then finally, on Saturday, October 20th, Black Women Animate will be presenting a boot camp, The Power of Our Roots, and you can register now. Registration will be from September 25th to October 15th. And according to the site, Black Women Animate is committed to supporting pre-professional and professional Black women, women of color, and non-binary creatives of color in honing their craft, building their industry acumen, and providing the resources and access needed to get paid work and elevate storytelling and inclusion in the industry. And there's going to be a number of very interesting panels, including the basics and business of storytelling, character design, how to get an agent, portfolio reviews, and also how to write for live action and children's television. So make sure to check that out. And that brings us to what we've been watching. So Jeff, what have you been watching?
Well, now that we're heading into October and the Halloween season, I am watching some spooky movies.
Ooh, what did you watch?
Yeah, I just saw The Nun.
That looks terrifying.
It was pretty spooky. Yeah, it's a spin-off of the Conjuring movies, you know, and this one's about a priest and a nun in training. There's got to be a word for that. But she hasn't taken her vows yet.
Okay.
So pre-nun? She's a pre-nun. Who investigate a spooky rundown convent in the middle of nowhere, which might be haunted by evil spirits, might have an evil nun running around, you know, that you've seen. Yes, you know, it happens. And it was pretty good. It gave me some Exorcist vibes with the imagery, you know, with this priest going around trying to, you know, ward off the evil spirits and stuff. I thought the director did a good job. It wasn't my favorite of the Conjuring series, but it did start to get me in the mood for Halloween. So that's a plus. And it was pretty good.
This is the fourth one now, right? Because isn't there, was it The Conjuring, Conjuring 2, Annabelle, and The Nun?
Yes. I don't know. There's, I'm not sure
about,
they have the spin-offs now.
And does The Nun, this happens before the other ones?
It does. I think it happens like in the, around 1850 or something.
Oh, cool. So it's like the Conjuring cinematic universe.
Yes, there's a whole cinematic universe now. They're all going to team up. And,
oh, no. that's a horrifying thought. All the demons are just going to get together.
Right, yeah.
Because isn't there one central family? Like, they're just going to end up like terrorizing these poor little kids.
Well, that's the funny thing. Like, with the Conjuring movies, you know, the first couple were about this. I think they were ghost hunters or psychics or whatever. But this has nothing to do with them. This is all, you know, going back in time and seeing how this nun came about and how this evil has gotten out into the world. So, yeah, it was good.
So is she actually a nun that became evil? Or is it a demon or some kind of ghost posing as a nun?
Yeah,
or does that give it away?
Well, yeah. Maybe
okay, I don't
want
to give
say.
It away.
But yeah, there's lots of nuns in it.
There's lots of nuns in this movie.
Lots of nuns, lots of evil nuns.
So the poster does not lie.
Right. And also, this year I went to Not Scary Farm.
Ooh, how was that?
It was great. I used to go every year, so it's been a while. It's been a couple of years at least since I've been. And they've really stepped it up. It's always been my favorite of the amusement parks that close down, and at night they decorate the park to look all spooky, spider webs, dark, fog, you know, all that stuff. But this year I thought the mazes were just so creative, and what they've done with the park, it just looks so good. Like, while you're walking around, you really get the sense that this is a haunted place.
Ooh.
You know, even when you're going through Camp Snoopy.
Even Camp Snoopy seems a little more eerie and a little, Charlie Brown might be lurking from behind a corner.
Totally. Some of the mazes that were really cool, there was one called Dark Entities where you're in a spaceship that's been overrun by aliens and like a mutated crew. That one was really cool. There's one called The Red Barn where you're in a haunted barn and there's haunted corn. It sounds so silly, but it was actually like, wow, this is really creative. They really went to town with this barn theme.
I love it. Haunted corn.
One of my favorites was this one called Lights Out. And it was cool because it's a maze. It's in a haunted house. But instead of being directed as you're walking around, they just give you a flashlight. And then the maze is completely dark.
Oh, that
and
sounds awful.
Yeah, it was really spooky. I love it. This is the first year that I've seen this one. And yeah, so you're looking in the corners. There, people are making sounds like above you. You're trying to find out where things are going. And then you can see things like skittering away or things closing or monsters. But then the flashlight is interactive. Like, they can turn it off or on.
At first,
I thought something was wrong with my flashlight because I'm going through the maze and it's flickering. I'm like, oh man, my battery's going out. And then it goes out. And I'm like, all right, they're messing with me, you know? And so that was really cool. There was another one where there's a zombie outbreak and they give you a light gun or whatever and you have to shoot and you get points and, you know, you tally them up at the end. And that one was pretty cool. But yeah, it was very fun, very spooky. If you're in the mood to really get into Halloween, definitely recommend it. I also recommend getting the buffet at the beginning, which is this buffet, but a spooky one. So it's a buffet. Because the food's really good. You know, there's roast beef, chicken, macaroni and cheese. And they also give you this commemorative cup that you can take into the park and then you get free drinks. Also, definitely recommend getting the front of the line pass because those lines get so long and sometimes the mazes get so backed up that do you really want to be waiting in line for hours, you know? If you get the front of the line pass, you can hit all the mazes, do a bunch of the roller coasters, and just cruise through. It was great.
That sounds good and horrifying. I'm glad you had a good time. When you were talking about the flashlight going on, I just thought, no. That just sounds terrible. No, thank you. But I mean, terrible in the best way possible. Good job on you, Not Scary Farm.
Yeah.
But
good job.
I am very impressed that you can go through these things and watch these movies because you see this stuff and like doesn't phase you at all.
Yeah.
I see this stuff and it's like, can't sleep for weeks. So good on you. You were stronger than I.
Yes, I built up a resistance over years of preteen watching, you know, Jason and Freddy and all that stuff and just becoming kind of immune to it, I guess.
That is a skill. That was very cool. So I've been watching The Good Place, which I have heard, not to sound like this is a pun, but I've heard nothing but good things about this show from numerous people. And I thought, okay, let me check out the show. It's on Netflix. The first two seasons are up there. Season three is about to start. Why not? I'll watch the first couple of episodes. Let's see how I do. Yeah, I'm almost done with season two after a week. I love the show. It's so much fun. For those of you who have not seen it, I will give you the basic premise. Don't worry, this really doesn't spoil anything. Basically, Kristen Bell wakes up. She's in a little office. She goes inside the office. She meets Ted Danson. He tells her, hey, sorry to tell you, you're dead. You died. But don't worry, you're in the good place. And she goes, oh, that's wonderful. And he goes, everybody in the good place. You get to live in this really cute little neighborhood with hundreds of other people and everybody's nice. And it's been designed based on how wonderful you were on Earth. And you get this custom-made house based on all of your interests when you're on Earth, and you're gonna get a soulmate, and you get to eat all this frozen yogurt, and you get to learn how to fly. It's great. And then she realizes, oh shoot, they picked the wrong person because she has the same name as somebody else. And they show her this video of, this is your life through your eyes. And she's looking at it going, oh, that's not me. I was not a humanitarian. I did not help orphan children. This is terrible. So she realizes she's not supposed to be there. And then she goes on this quest to basically become a good person so that they will never suspect that this is not where she's supposed to be, because the bad place is pretty terrible. But it's funny. It is a really funny and weird show, and it's really interesting because they bring a lot of philosophy and different ideas about religion and the afterlife into it, which is really interesting. And all the actors are great. I especially love the woman who plays Janet. Watch the show. She's just wonderful and super funny and weird. I love it. So I highly recommend it. It's great. And there's a lot of twists. A lot of fun twists.
How does she become a better person? Do they send her back to Earth or whatever? Or does it all take place in
She
the good
meets
place?
Some other people who decide to help her once they figure out what's going on. And it's really fun trying to watch her trying to become what they think a better person is, and sometimes she does well and sometimes not so hot. Not so great.
Oh man, I have to check this out.
I highly recommend it. It's very fun. And that brings us to now the main event. So as promised, we have the second part of our wonderful interview with the fine folks at Tyco Animation Studios. So this time we spoke with Joy Johnson, who's the CG supervisor and one of the riggers for One Small Step. And we also spoke with Andrew Jennings, who's the head of pipeline and also one of the technical animators. So Jeff, how did you feel about the second half of our interview?
Just as inspired as the first interview. I love both of them. They had such great chemistry. Their camaraderie was just fun and infectious. It just made me smile the whole time. You know, they were just so great. And it was also cool with her being a CG supervisor and him being head of pipeline, technical animator. Those were things that I really didn't know what went into those jobs. So hearing them talk about it and hearing the problems they had to solve was super cool.
It was very cool because we haven't had a lot of people on the show on the technical side. So It was great getting to ask them those questions about it. And like you said, their camaraderie is infectious. Yeah. There's a lot of laughs. We had a really good time talking with these folks. So without further ado, we're happy to present episode 80, The Making of One Small Step with Tyco Studios, part 2. So I was really curious if you just tell people a little bit about your background and what you do and then what you ended up doing for the film. So we'll start with you, Joyce. What is your background in animation?
I went to school for fine arts at Cal State Long Beach and then transferred to Fullerton to get more into animation. I didn't actually get into computer animation till my last like 2 semesters or something like that. My last semester, I took a rigging class and Nickelodeon had an apprenticeship program and they were coming down to advertise and they saw my demo reel that like all the students made a demo reel the night before they showed up. Like obviously that's how you roll. And so we all showed our demo reels to them and they actually contacted my teacher afterwards to hire me. So I got hired out of college and I spent my final semester or two working at Nickelodeon and going to college so that I could finish that. I was at Nickelodeon for about 5 years working on their CG shows. And then I moved over to Disney and worked at Disney for 5 or 6 years.
Okay.
And then now Tyco.
And then Andrew, what's the shortened version?
So out of college, I got a job at Rhythm and Hues, worked on a bunch of fun and goofy movies like Alvin and the Chipmunks, Yogi Bear, that kind of thing. But also got to do some of their muscle simulation for movies like Snow White and the Huntsman and was it Hunger Games. I didn't like work on it, but I was like in the same room.
You watched other people work on it?
Yeah, exactly. No, but you know, when you're in a big room and like everybody's working on a different project, you kind of like sometimes it's just nice to step away from your desk and, hey, what are you working on? I don't know, I can't figure this out. Okay, let me help you type of situation. So yeah, Rhythm and Hues was a really great opportunity right out of school. And then from there, I pivoted over to Disney where we all met. And I was there from Frozen until Moana. Technically, the Frozen short, the Olaf short, was last thing I worked on, which was super cute and fun to work on. And then we pivoted over here to Tyco, as a group.
I was actually Wreck-It Ralph to Wreck-It Ralph at Disney. Yeah. I started on Wreck-It Ralph 1, and then I left right as they were starting Wreck-It Ralph 2. So I worked on it for like a little bit and got to do a couple characters. Oh yeah, my background's character rigging. I didn't say that at all. So Ralph to Ralph.
It was a great bookend.
Yeah, right? I was like, okay, like this is fitting. Yeah. This is like, you know, metaphorical or something.
Yeah.
So how did y'all decide, you know what, we want to do this. We want to get in on Tyco. We want to start this new adventure.
I think for me, it's like I worked in Disney at the features and like I did some of the main characters and worked on the big movies. And then for a break in between, I got to work on a couple of the shorts that they were doing at Disney. And I just really liked the shorts and the smaller atmosphere and then the interconnectedness of all of the departments. Since there's less people, you get to talk and you get to interact and you get kind of more of a voice. And I just liked that idea. And I wanted to stay on the shorts. But unfortunately, it's a feature studio. So it's like, they're like, no, you're going to have to come off eventually. And I was like, I like hanging out with all the other departments. Departments too. Like, I want to keep this feel. And just Tyco came along and asked me what I thought. And I was like, why not? Let's give it a go. Try it out.
Yeah, certainly. In a big machine like Disney, it's kind of easy to get disconnected or kind of forget that other departments are made up of other people if you're not constantly in contact. So the Disney shorts are a really great way that they keep connectivity between departments. And that's definitely one of those things. When you get on a small team like that, it becomes a much more personal process. It becomes your artistic voice is validated it a lot more because you're having a conversation with the other artists instead of like working as part of the manufacturing chain.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a manufacturing chain exactly, but you know what I mean? It's,
you're not just an email.
Yeah.
You're like a person and a face and an artist.
Yeah.
So as soon as you remember that there's someone on the other end of the email, it becomes very like, oh, what can I do to make your life better? Oh, I could do that. That's not that hard. Like, let me help. And then just a back and forth starts, you know, and it's nice.
Instead of by email where you're like, this thing's broken, please fix. And you just get sent. Yeah. Like, it's very impersonal.
Downstream.
So,
yeah.
And Joy and I were always big into, you know, going to other people's desks instead of just doing the email or using the production team.
Mm-hmm.
The production teams are all great at making sure that communication works really well at the big studios, but Joy and I just enjoy that interpersonal connection, animation and modeling and so on and so forth.
Yeah, definitely. When I started out at Nickelodeon, we started on Tak and the Power of Juju. So like their first CG, as far as I'm aware of, like their first CG at Nickelodeon. And so we started, and the whole thing started as an apprentice program. So there was a dozen or less, and we grew from that. And we were all in the same room just like this.
Okay.
So you learn really quickly what the people in other departments are because we're all having to work together.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're right next to the modeler or you're right next to the animator, you can kind of spin and grow a lot faster. So I felt like Tycho's kind of like reminds me of Nickelodeon, where it's like, we're all in it together because we're literally all in it in the same room, you know? So kind of that feel.
Anytime you need to pivot and you're on a small team, it's much easier to like write that ship than on a massive, you know, Disney has what, 800 employees at peak.
Yeah.
So getting everybody on board and switching all of the pipeline over, you know, it's a big machine to turn, and they do a good job of it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, being on a small team like this, it's kind of nice just being able to go, hey, I'm going to change this thing. Does anybody care? And all of the important people are in the same room.
Yeah.
And they can just go, yeah, that's fine. Or, no, that's going to break everything. You go, okay. The conversations are very quick and the turnarounds are very quick. And you can kind of evolve your process very fast.
Okay. So how did y'all then adjust being at Tycho? Now, you know, you have this freedom, but there's also your resources because it's not an 800-person company.
Mm-hmm.
How did y'all manage that? Your respective teams?
Yeah, that's definitely one of the nice things about a big studio is, you know, when something's broken, usually there's a dozen people you can just go, this is broken, please fix it. And you just slide it down into their department. But here you go, this is broken, I have to fix it. This is, everything is mine. So there's always that moment when you leave a big studio, you open a drop-down menu in Maya, and you realize, oh, that was a proprietary tool. Okay, crap, I have to write that myself. Joy, have you written this tool? No, I was going to ask you if you wrote it.
And then we rock, paper, scissors, and who's going to lunch and who's going to sit and write this tool. So, kind of like that. Or just, you know, who's got free time to work on it, or, you know, kind of back and forth of, I think when we first started Tycho, it was sitting down for like the first 2 weeks and finding all the tools that we don't have anymore. It's that was just like, what's vanilla Maya? Like, what's basic Maya? And what's it do? Because I haven't been in that a while.
Oh, yeah.
And then just write down all the tools that we used to have and that we used and like the principles behind those tools and like, okay, well, like, let's start remaking them. So.
Yeah. And then I know I looked back at like the tools I was using in college, the small scripts that I wrote. And I was so dumb and the scripts were so bad. But the tools work. So sometimes you pull those up and you go, okay, Joy, this is messy. And she's like, who wrote this? Like, I'm not sure. and she's like, well, it works for now. And I'm like, we'll clean it up later. Don't worry about it. I'm sorry. But, you know, it's
you
one of those things.
You just did that recently. I pulled out the folder of all my super old scripts from before Disney and at Nickelodeon or whenever. And I was just like, all right, let's see what me did 10 years ago and figure, maybe I can update these.
Well, and how does working with the China team also, like, don't they need some of these tools as well? Like,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
How do you do that?
It's interesting, too, because they're, a lot of the stuff that they, the environment that they've come from is much more contract work.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of, they come into the studio and they've got a USB stick just kind of full of tools that they've used. And so we're going, okay, like, how are you guys approaching these things? And a lot of times it's just stuff that they share between each other because, you know, sometimes they take short-term contract work that they do from home. home. Right. Sometimes it's scripts that they write at work, and it's a little bit of a different environment than here necessarily. Mm-hmm. Like even at the big VFX houses, people bring their scripts sometimes, but most of the time there's a pipeline in place.
Right.
So,
or if you have any like good open source free stuff that you found on the web, we just always share because I'm not like trying to let other people struggle while I I'm gonna go take a lunch and like we want it to be easier for them. So sometimes, and since there's a language barrier and stuff, it's like giving them the tool and then breaking down visually how to use the tool using like colors and stuff. Since I worked with Nickelodeon and we had an outsourced studio in India, I became very familiar over the years of how to interact with an overseas studio and how to best communicate your point across and how to work together even though there's like a difference. So a lot of our like my notes at Nickelodeon were based off of color and number, so you can visually connect like, oh, the pink dot to the pink one and that's the note, so like look at the picture and that's what I'm pointing to. So I do a lot of that color-based notes.
Joy was very helpful. I know I was one of the worst people at communicating. I mean, you know, I was very friendly and everybody was very eager to work with us, which was very fun, but you don't realize how many strange idioms you use, you know.
He has a very robust vocabulary.
So,
I was like, good for you, but
Joy keeps telling you simpler words, not because they need the simpler words, just because they speak more English than I speak Mandarin, right? So it's one of those, you know, I say, oh, is that cool? Oh man, this thing's so hot. Oh, and it's confusing because those should be opposite things, but they both mean this is good.
So like one of the guys was like, in one of the questions, was it Simmons that said, I'm sorry, is I am down with this this is up?
Yeah.
Which one is good? They're both good?
Yeah. Like, are you up for that?
Are you up for that? I'm down for this.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
He's like, we're like, no, they're both good. You're good.
We're all guilty of these idioms to different degrees, but
I grew up with, like my whole childhood, I grew up with exchange students. Mm-hmm. So I always had someone in the house that didn't speak English as their first language. And my mom's a teacher. So I very much learned how to like try to take all your slang out of your dialogue and break down your vocabulary to the basics. Like kind of if you didn't learn it in high school Spanish, then you probably shouldn't say it because they probably don't know it in English. So kind of just trying to think from their side of what words would I have learned in taking my second language or something like that. So.
Yeah, but it's been great. I mean, everybody over there is super gung-ho and we're all gung-ho. And it's a really fun collaboration to have.
Yeah. And it's fun. They're younger, so it's kind of fun watching them grow also.
Yeah.
And like I have a modeler over there, Simmons, and he's like, we used to joke that he's like our team mascot because he's so happy and encouraging and just vibrant all the time. And he wanted to learn so much about us and just everything America, and he's so excited. Mm-hmm. It was really cute to interact with him, and just he would teach us about like the moon festival and what the moon cake means, and we'd teach him about like, I was on a kick about like pumpkin spice, and it's like we just go berserk over here. And he's like, I don't know what pumpkin spice is, and we're like, oh my god, I'll send you a care package, you know? But it was fun like learning on both sides, you know, from each other.
That's great. And then on the technical side, so you know, we're looking at all this fantastic art and all of the things that you guys were doing, so how did you figure out like stylistically technical wise the look of it and the feel of it and how you were going to do and render different things?
I mean, there was trial and error. We did a full X-Gen hair rig at one point and, you know, tried a bunch of sims, and just with the style it didn't work, so we abandoned that. And Joy was like, well, I could just do a polygon rig, and that's what we ended up with, and it looks really good.
Even for the look itself, like the very first shot that we did was our test shot, was Luna sitting in front of the TV. And we actually, in the very beginning, went all the way back to like the traditional CG Pixar look and did the whole shot in that look. And then we just decided like, no, we really want it to look like Bobby's drawings. Like if we're going to do something different, do it different. So, and then we just repivoted and said, no, we're going to go with this different style and go that way.
Yeah. And I think one of the nice things about that process and like finding out that's what we all wanted, because there was a minute where yeah. like each one of us was a little frustrated individually, but we didn't communicate to each other. Like, I don't want to do photo reel. I don't want to do photo. And so finally, when we had that conversation, it was about breaking down the basics of what that look is and what is successful about it in VizDev, and then just kind of reverse engineering that in the same way that Bobby does his Photoshop layers. Making those composite EXR layers.
Layers, yeah.
Yeah, separating that out and then kind of trying to keep it to the brass tacks basics.
I think there was like, we know how to do the traditional Pixar Disney look and that's what we're familiar with. And we didn't know how to do this look. So it was kind of like, are we going to take the risk and try to figure it out and see if we can do it? And that's a lot more R&D and breakdown and just like experimenting. Mm-hmm. How long is that going to take? Because R&D always takes as long as it takes.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's the big question. Or do we play it safe?
Mm-hmm.
And so we finally decided to not play it safe and we will just figure it out along the way. And I think what Jennings said, like once we started thinking about in terms of Bobby's drawings and Photoshop, we started looking at CG a different way and like, okay, let's try to look at it from a strictly artistic flat Photoshop files way and then
mm-hmm.
kind of reverse it and start breaking down the CG scene like Photoshop layers, you know?
Yeah, at some point we were like, can we just split out all these layers like they used to with cells?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Photoshop mm-hmm. is just an evolution of the multiplane camera.
Yeah.
So can we just take that in 3D and just make all those different layers? Because the computer can split anything out that you want.
Yeah.
And it's just about refining that down and saying, I just want these flat objects.
Oh, yeah. I saw something you guys posted where, I think it was Luna running on a track. And then the camera, you know, you guys showed the layers with the hair and how it's completely separate from her body. But from that camera angle, it just looks so good. Just the way it flops. And
I think that was one of the challenges was our hair because we wanted it to look very 2D.
Yeah.
And like CG hair doesn't look like that. So I went through a couple different ideas. So I started off with the cool rigging CG, everything's automated,
right.
This is awesome. And it didn't, like, it was not easy to animate, and it just looked more CG in the way it moved, and so we kind of backed up and like, okay, wait a minute, if I was doing this like a stop motion, what would I do? What would I need? What controls do I need? And stuff comes back from your past or whatever. And I had this college art assignment at Long Beach where you had to, it was like an installation piece, and it could only look like one way in one perspective. So it was a split apart wrought iron like wires, and then when you got to one angle it turned into a fairy, like it was a girl with wings on like a wave. And then as soon as you shifted, all the wires broke again. So it was kind of like, well, the hair's kind of like that, as long we're only playing to one angle, so you only need one angle. Who cares about the rest? Which is very un-CG, but it worked, you know.
So. I love seeing it. I'm glad you guys posted that.
Thanks. Yeah, he was like, you should post
it. We have more of those.
I was like, meh, whatever. And he's like, I think people will like it.
Yeah.
I was like, do whatever you want, Jennings. And apparently people liked it, so it's cool.
Yeah, I was wondering, because we asked this earlier for Shafu and another editor, how did you guys embrace challenges and embrace having to figure that out without just going down the rabbit hole of what are we doing and why?
I think on a small team like this, you treat it more like a family as much as possible, and you kind of just take turns being really pissed off or frustrated, because you know, sometimes there are days when I'm just like, I'm just staring at lines of code and it doesn't make any sense, and I wrote all of it, and Joy looks across the room and she sees that I'm just like fuming mad, there's like the angry lines coming off my head, and she goes, hey, let's go for a walk around the block.
Who wants
like,
a drink?
And so it's just about trying to be responsible and empathetic and aware of everybody else's plight, because no matter what the complexities are, taking those risks, it's going to be frustrating and it's going to be hard, but you know, you try and have fun with it. You try and understand when somebody else is like, nobody's being slow on purpose. I think the team was pretty good.
Like everybody, everybody has their like little department that they're worried about, but since we're all in the same room, you see the interconnectedness and you can see like, I might really want my this thing, But if I look over Jennings or Chez looks over at me, he gets, I'm not screwing around. So if you see me hovering over my desk, pulling my hair out, you know I'm working. Yeah. So you understand. Like, no, you take your time. You do you. I can wait. There's other stuff to do. There's a lot. I mean, there's only like six of us to do an entire team's worth of stuff. So just pivot and do something else so that person has the time to do what they need to do. Like, I'd rather do it right. Yeah, like even with the modelers and stuff, I was like, I'd rather you take the time and do it right than do it quick and dirty and give it to me.
Right.
And then we iterate back and forth and just take the time you need now. Mm-hmm. And it'll make, I mean, every as clean as someone is, it makes it easier for the next department and the next department.
That must be one of the advantages of working with a smaller studio where there's more emotion and more personal connection.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, for sure. Well, and that's the funny thing. I mean, like, we all work together at Disney, and there are definitely times where I've picked up Chez's shots, right? So when we started here, he was like, was I ever super rude without realizing? And I was like, no, you're always like fairly thoughtful and your stuff is usually clean. So it's one of those, even though there's a lot of distance, you kind of try to keep your things tidy at a big studio.
Right.
It's just a lot easier here because you just see that stress.
Yeah.
Or that joy. It just permeates the room.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a lot easier.
I think before I came here, I always knew of Bobby Pontius because his artwork, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And I never met Shafu. And I met Chez once. Jennings and I were in the same department, so I knew him. And we all worked, me, Jennings, and Chez worked on Inner Workings together. And I only met him once during that. He had a shot where the heart swipes really fast. So he added an extra arm to make it more 2D, to have like three arms going at once.
Yeah.
And in the render, it didn't have the three arms, and I caught it. So I ran over to him, and I was like, hey, it didn't render out right, and the three arms. And he's like, oh my God, that was over like one frame. Good catch. And that was the only time I met him. So I was like, hey, you're the three-arm guy. You know? So I remember you that one day. But that's pretty much it. Got to kind of meet everyone else once I got here. So
yeah.
I think we all knew of each other. We just hadn't really met.
Yeah.
And had either of you ever thought of one day working at a studio like this, like an independent studio or doing your own thing? Or had you always figured, I'm going to work in the big studio system forever and then retire, done?
Yeah, that's a funny one because I think we're all so self-motivated that we all have side projects anyway. Like even when we're working a 60-hour work week at a big studio, 70-hour, 80-hour, or whatever that work week is. We're always fiddling with stuff at home.
Mm-hmm.
So getting organized outside of that, it definitely wasn't surprising to me when I was like, yeah, this is an option.
I think I had joked about starting my own company.
Yeah,
you know, like with big companies, you're always like, they're doing this wrong. They're doing that wrong. If I had my own company, you know?
Yeah,
but I didn't think about actually doing it, I guess. Or that seemed a little far-fetched, I guess.
Well, especially when you're working on like Zootopia and
you
know, all these big productions, Wreck-It Ralph. And then was that scary going from this big studio to a smaller company?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of security that you're leaving.
Yeah.
So
there's infrastructure. There's
a
free
huge,
cereal and
coffee. Oh, yeah. The coffee bar.
Yeah.
It's a lot of, it's a big risk. It's a big leap to go from that much security into something that has like day-to-day security. Like, I don't know. I might see you tomorrow. We'll find out. Like, I don't know. If I come in and everything's gone, I'll know. But that was a big leap. But I think we're all in it. At this point in our life, I can take this kind of risk. So maybe further along in the future, I wouldn't be able to take this kind of risk. So if not now, when?
Mm-hmm.
Might as well try.
Yeah. And what did your families and loved ones think? Were they like, what are you doing? Or were they like, cool?
My family was all in.
Okay.
They were
That's
very
great.
Like, do it. So pushing at me. I was like, get off. Like, let me decide. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think we all have like super robust family and friend systems.
Mm-hmm.
So it that makes the risk seem that much less scary, I think.
Yeah.
And then knowing that like we're all gonna be here, like, oh, Joy's gonna be there? Okay, well that takes some stress off. Okay, Chesworth, yeah, okay, great. Well, Bob, you know, so you go down the line. And then, yeah, family and friends, they're like, I mean, I would stay at the big place just because that's job security and you retire and you just die there. I'm like, oh, well, when you phrase it like that, I think it's a risk, you know? So, but I mean, that's the thing. Like, Disney's not going to go anywhere. DreamWorks isn't going to Pixar. Yeah. Like, all these
mega
places,
companies.
They're so robust and they have so much legacy and they've got so many great intellectual properties that they're not going to disappear.
Mm-hmm.
So if this risk doesn't pan out in 5, 10, 20 years, maybe we go back and retire there if you want. But hopefully that's not the case. So
it's not like we take this risk and when we're done with it, all animation has closed.
And when you left, you weren't like burning bridges.
It's like, I'm going to take this and this and this.
But yeah, I think all of us on the team are very self-motivated. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to be. You can't just start a company and then be like, hey, who wants to go to the beach today?
Yeah.
So everybody's got to have that individual drive or else we're just, you know, not going to make it.
Yeah.
So.
And it's funny because this industry is not a, I don't know, it's not a casual industry. It's not really a 9-to-5 industry to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to work through all of that just at a regular employee position, it's not, it doesn't feel that much different to found a company because it's like, wow, I was already doing all this stuff. So it wasn't crazy. It was scary, but it was fun scary. Like, hey, they're building this roller coaster. It's not done yet. Do you want to ride it? Well, people wouldn't offer. I mean, I wasn't at least a little safe.
Yeah. It's like, we're going to give you a helmet or give you a pickaxe. You kind of work on it as you go down.
Yeah, yeah. It's the Wallace and Gromit laying the track.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that. He was like, hey, we got to finish this short by such and such. I was like, hey, I'm building the rig. So like, the short doesn't go anywhere until I'm done. So just let me go.
Yeah.
It's the laying the track.
Yeah.
I've got to be finished eventually because we have to finish
shooting
it.
At you.
Okay.
And while you guys were working on the short, did you work on personal projects? Did you have a chance to relax once in a while? Was it more just like...
Does sleep count?
Yeah.
We didn't do that either.
Definitely counts.
Yeah.
Did any of that happen?
My new hobby became sleeping.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I think it really peaked quickly because we we set a lot of deadlines for ourselves that we're trying to keep. It was a very robust schedule. So, you know, early on, it was kind of easy to continue fiddling with those side projects. But, you know, you kind of bring your side projects into this or they become your main projects. But then once you're working, you know, a 27-hour day, it's like, I'm over 3 hours. I owe 3 hours on the next day. Like, there's no time to sleep, really. So at a certain point, you're just making sure that the boat's not sinking any faster. You're just like, yeah, we're just sinking at this rate.
And I think we all came over with our one specialty. And I'm like, yeah, I'm rigging. I'll sit down. I'll make like an auto rig for us. And then I was like, wait, there's no modeling. Well, I guess I'm on a model too. And like, oh, okay, so we're going to texture some.
Yeah.
I'm going to model some. And so it's like, okay, everything. Just do everything that nobody else is doing. And like you, just Jennings, do everything around you that you can possibly do. So your hobbies become all of the other departments that we don't have, you know?
Right.
So.
Yeah. Now that we're a little bit closer to 9-to-5 again, it's, you know, you doodle on the side, or you model on the side, play video games.
Does it feel a little bit slower now? You're just like, oh, wow, yeah, you just do whatever now.
I don't know why it doesn't feel that way.
It doesn't feel that much slower.
I was like, I feel like we should be chilling at some bar right now. But I'm like, I got to make documentation so when we hire more modelers, they have guidelines and I'm like, why do I keep finding stuff to do? It's the like self-driven thing, you know?
Yeah.
That we will always find something that we need to add.
Yeah, I think that's the thing.
To get a studio bigger.
Keeps the ship on course and floating. Is the fact that we're constantly making more jobs for ourselves. By like, this is a tool that we need. This is a refinement that we need in our process. Like, workflows need to be changed.
The list doesn't end. Yeah. I was talking to Eric, the animation supervisor in Wuhan, yesterday, like through GChat. And I was telling him what I was going to do and what I'm going to do next. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh yeah, I have to put together like test packages for people who apply for different positions and how to give them tests that will test specific skills in each department. It's like, man, like
That's another thing. Just turn over and put it on my list. This list never ends. Like, come on. Why did I just give myself another assignment? I'm never going to make it to the bar.
Do you think the next project is going to be a little easier, or do you think there's just going to be new challenges you're going to create for yourself?
There will be new challenges.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think there will always be new challenges.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, we'll slowly build and we'll slowly add people, and that'll be nice. It'll alleviate some stresses and kind of let us get back to refining what we're working on. But I think that's a big aspect of being a startup. It's not going to be until our third big endeavor that we're going to be like, okay, we have like a fairly robust thing, and then we just tweak and refine.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yeah,
it's like you're building a cruise ship out of a tugboat. So it's going to take a little while, even as you add people to help you build more decks and decks.
And as we add people,
you're nautical. Joy is bar.
Yeah, I just want to go to the bar.
That's what fuels us.
Yes. But I think, like, as we add more people, also, it's important to me because I have worked at that bottom level of the labor force and stuff like that, the getting it done, the cog in the wheel feel,
right,
that like as we grow bigger, it's important to me to like talk to each department about what their repetitive tasks so that we can help and like step in, no matter if it's not our field or department, like what we can do to make sure that we're working smarter, not harder.
Right.
So because I don't need people here working the same task over and over again and beating their head against the wall and never getting to go home. How can we help?
Mm-hmm.
How can we be more efficient? Work-life balance. I need you to go home and sleep.
Yeah.
Oh, but I gotta get this done. And I was like, no, I need you to sleep right now. Like, just, you know, balance. I'm into balance.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have it right now, but eventually we will.
Right.
We're building towards balance.
Yeah,
yeah. But just to help each other, you know.
Oh, yeah.
In every department. I think we were, at the end of the short, we were like, all right, great. And the lighters right now are in Wuhan. We're like, all right, awesome job, you guys. What'd you do so we can help? Because
yeah,
like, I don't know how you did this. So
yeah,
can we make repetitive tasks into code?
Right.
And so we can help make tools for you to make it faster. And they're like, oh, no, we're okay. I was like, no, I don't need you to, like,
yeah,
we want to help. Yeah.
They're, like, connecting each individual node by hand.
Yeah.
Like, they're all a standard name.
Me.
Like, we can automate that. It's,
yeah,
like, two buttons and it'll be done.
And they're like, oh, really? I'm like, yes, we want to help.
Yeah.
So let us help. Yeah, hopefully just a back and forth between all departments so we can just be more aware of the pains and how to help each other.
That's good. And then I was wondering too, what was it like when it was done and you guys got to go out into the world and watch it with an audience and see other people react to that?
Oh, it's so weird watching other people watch it. In the beginning, we were like, I mean, our first was Noman, right?
Yeah.
And watching other people watch it, I was like, oh, this is so strange, you know?
Did they react the way you thought that you anticipated?
Every crowd is a little bit different.
Okay.
Some things get laughs and we're like, oh, well, that was a sad moment. No, some things get laughs in some spaces more than others. Some people like the slapsticky stuff. Some people, you know, you get awes in different spots. Oh, like, oh, that's sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, yeah, I mean, I guess that's sweet. Oh, that's good. You know,
mm-hmm.
You're like, everybody's got a different emotional range.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny how rooms
mm-hmm.
react collectively.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Disney screening was different from the DreamWorks screening.
Yeah.
DreamWorks was different from Blue Sky, so on and so
yeah,
forth.
Yeah, very different. Yeah, it's interesting because, like, when we first finished it and stuff, I was still very emotionally tied to the story.
Mm-hmm.
It was still getting to me.
Oh, wow.
And so we're like up on the Noman stage and I'm like, don't cry. Like, I'm just sitting there because the music
yeah.
hits me and it like pulls that string.
Yeah.
And even like after a while, even if I'm not looking at the screen, I know the moment that's
right,
there
yeah.
because
mm-hmm.
of the music. So I'm just like, hold it together. You're
yeah.
on stage. Like, they're going to flick on lights and they're recording you. Like, hold it together.
I think the other funny thing about all of these situations is we're always sitting up front because we're about to, like, talk about the process of making it.
Yeah.
So for whatever reason, we're just sitting there watching people. Like, we're not looking at the screen. We're pointed at the audience.
Yeah.
And
well, see,
so
Bobby can't look at the audience.
Well,
and, like, a lot of people. And he was like, man, you were staring straight at
oh,
them.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I'm going to look at their
responses. And Bobby's like, I can't look at the people. And everybody turns and watches the stage, and I'm just staring at the audience like deadpan. He's like, how can you do that? I'm so nervous. And I was like, oh, I do math in my head. And he's like, what? And I was like, I sit there and do like little math calculate so that I'm not focused on the short, and then I can just objectively stare at the audience. You know?
It is funny though, because that they'll mirror kind of what you've experienced watching the film.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the same reason that Bobby can't watch it. Every once in a while, you're just scanning the crowd, and there's like a sweet old lady watching it, and she's just having a nice moment with your film, and then that hits you.
Okay.
And you're like, oh, buddy, it's having a great time. And then you're like, why am I tearing up? And then Joy's looking at me, and she's like laughing at me. And I'm like, no, there's no one. She's having a great time watching the film that we made.
And then you start chain-reacting tears.
In the very beginning, it was hard for me because I'm very empathetic. And so it was hard for me to look at people. That's why I brought in the math and let me just kind of distract myself. Because if I start seeing someone cry, I'm going to go. And it's just, I can't afford to do that because we're on stage being recorded. I was like, I'm an empathy crier. I can't deal with the crowd. And can we come out after the crowd is done? But after a couple, I got used to it. And I was like, I can handle this. I know when we did it at Gallery Nucleus, though, that was a strong reaction for me. Because when they flicked on the lights, there was this father, husband, and his wife, like an older couple. And the guy was just in tears. And I was like, that hit me. And his wife was trying to like comfort him. And like, and he was like, just get off. Give me a minute. Just give me a minute. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to run and hug you. Like, we'll cry together. I don't know you, you know? But so it's always very interesting seeing like different people's reactions and how I'm going to react to their reactions.
Yeah, for sure.
But now I've held it together. I'm doing better. This is, we've done so many screenings that I'm like, okay, hey, I'm ready. I'm ready. So,
it's a little bit easier to watch people.
Yeah. Oh no, that's a horrible thing to get desensitized to.
So this film has killed all emotion.
Well, and it's also, we finished it in February, so we've had enough time to like separate ourselves emotionally from the short. It's like, all right, it's screening time, let's go, you know. But before, I think it's hard. I think that's why it was hard for me, because I would get emotional watching the short still. So when we would screen it, I couldn't watch the short. So I watched the audience instead. And Bobby's like, how can you watch the audience? I have to turn and watch the short, so I'm not looking at it. So it's just how we all got through for the beginning.
So I always like to ask at the end, you know, going through this entire process, for anybody that is thinking of, hey, I might one day want to do exactly what you guys are doing, what advice would you give to other people?
I don't know. I mean, I think whenever people ask me that, I'm like, why is it a one day thing? Like, computers are super inexpensive. Mm-hmm. Software is super accessible. Just do it now. Like, jump in and get your hands dirty. The experience of a studio is great because you get all this, I don't know, robust knowledge. You get access to all these great artists and engineers and that kind of thing. And you build out your ability to move fast and move dynamically in the environment. But number one, just get started.
I guess I would say, if I had advice, it would be aware of what you don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're in your department doing your particular job or your skill or talent or expertise, it's just really important that you go around and learn the other skills around you. Mm-hmm. Because I think if we only knew our one expertise, it would not have worked. We don't have like half the departments here, you know? So just the fact that we did, like me and Jennings were very communicative with all the other departments when we were at other studios. Just walking around, learning from people, growing from people. So you have somewhere to start, like a basis. Because if I knew nothing about modeling or UVs or texturing, this would have been a lot harder. So just kind of use the people around you, learn from them, they learn from you, grow, and be aware of what you don't know. Don't act like you know everything, because you're going to find out really quickly you don't. So, and then it's about being humble enough to go ask for help and figure it out and learn from it. Yeah. So that no matter how many years in the industry that you've been in, there's still room to grow.
It's always funny when people say that we're experts, and I'm like, oh no, I'm an idiot. But like in a good way because I'm aware of it.
He's self-aware.
I'm ready to learn at any time. I don't know. I mean, I feel like anytime somebody asks a question or like, can you guys do this? It's easy to just go, no, that's not a possibility. It's much better to go, well, okay, let me play with it and figure it out. Or if you have an idea, let me know.
Mm-hmm. Or just overestimate yourself too.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I think if you go into something thinking you know everything, it's going to be a lot harder hit to you.
Mm-hmm.
Where if you go in being a little more humble, knowing, all right, I'm going to have some challenges to meet. I'm going to have to learn some new stuff. And there's going to be a whole lot of growing going on right now. Mm-hmm. Then I think you're more receptive to what is going to happen in a startup. Yeah. So
think,
no one's an expert in everything.
Yeah, that's just like setting yourself up for success too. Because if you're open, then people are way more likely to take the time to help you with things. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, just being humble and open to opportunity, it just makes you that much more interesting for someone to go, oh yeah, well, let me stop and like tell you how I did it.
Mm-hmm. And definitely the fact that you don't have to be an expert and you don't have to be an expert in everything. Like, know what you know and then learn from others.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
be receptive, be open. And that's the whole point of having a team. Like, if you knew everything, you don't need nobody.
Yes,
so like,
right.
So humble yourself, because that's the whole point of having a team, is that they're the experts in their field and we're all trying to help each other.
That's so fantastic. Well, thank you both so much for your time. It was just great hearing your perspective and your stories.
Yeah, thanks for coming out here.
Thanks for inviting us over. This is fantastic.
And that concludes our interviews with Tyco Studios. Special thanks to everyone involved. Thank you so much, Joy and Andrew and Andrew and Xiaofu and Bobby. And also special thanks again to Brandy Braxton for enabling us to visit the studios and speak with everybody and watch the film. We greatly enjoyed our time and we hope that all of you out there enjoy today's interview. And if you've enjoyed today's interview, please leave a 5-star review in iTunes. All of your reviews help everyone to find out more about the show. And thank you to everyone who has left a positive review. We very much appreciate it. And you can also support the show by visiting www.theanimatedjourney.com and clicking on the PayPal button on the right-hand side. All of your donations enable us to pay for the technical costs associated with hosting the podcast. And to see what else is going on in the wonderful world of animation, make sure to check out our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/theanimatedjourney. On Tumblr, the site is theanimatedjourney.tumblr.com. And on Instagram and Twitter, the handle is @animjourney. And Jeff, where can people find you online?
They can find me online at Twitter at Jeffbot, J-E-F-B-O-T, and on Tumblr, same address, J-E-F-B-O-T, and on Instagram at Shootzee, S-H-O-O-T-Z-E-E.
Excellent. And you can find out what I've been up to lately by visiting www.sketchysoul.com. On Tumblr, the website is sketchysoul.tumblr.com. And on Instagram, the handle is @sketchysoul. So that does it for today's interview. Make sure to tune in next time for another great interview. And until next time, be encouraged and have a great day, everybody.